You know, I have this, I have really one of the most amazing jobs that I think I can imagine. I get to spend a lot of time on college campuses talking with college students, and I think I've mentioned before, we sometimes go on campus with this large exhibit. It's 40 feet high. 40 feet high? No, 20 feet high, 40 feet on a side. By the way, any miscommunications that I make today, any failures of speech, chalk that up to not getting any sleep in the last 2 weeks. So we put up this exhibit. It's 20 feet high, 40 feet on a side, triangular, and it actually creates dialogue all over the campus on the issue of abortion. And part of the reason it creates dialogue is it actually shows accurate pictures of abortion. Now you might be sitting there and saying, okay, I can't believe I'm in church and I'm listening to an absolute nutcase. And in fact, many people think that we are crazy when they come on campus and see this thing, and then they come and talk to us. And sometimes that changes the dynamic a little bit. And I was on campus at the University of Northern Colorado a few years back. And sometimes I'll stand in front of the exhibit, but behind our what we call our free speech rail. And so people know that I'm with the exhibit. A lot of times we have all of our trained volunteers out just talking with people. And it's just a very easy conversation. But sometimes I stand behind the free speech rail, so then people decide that I'm the one to be angry at. And so I had this little crowd around me at on this campus that morning, and I sometimes scan just around the crowd just to make sure that everybody's doing okay. Sometimes people get angry, sometimes people are frustrated, they're sad, they're, and so we just try to make sure that everybody's doing okay out there. We purposefully train volunteers to engage people in dialogue, and that helps, but I just scan the crowd. And I see over here, there's this skater, and he is pretty angry, and he's throwing his skateboard on the ground, he's talking to his friend, and he's, you know, yelling some obscenity in the process, and I catch his eye, and he looks at me, he says, "Don't you dare look at me." So I just keep moving on. And about that time, a very well-dressed young woman kind of came out of the crowd. And I figured she was probably a professor. I'm not totally sure. But she had an agenda that morning. And so she came out of the crowd and she decided to proclaim this. "This man," pointing at me, "this man has nothing intelligent to say." So I just standing there, kind of backed up, and I said, okay, now let's see. I wonder if I can come up with anything intelligent. Sometimes I act a little bit like Lieutenant Columbo in these situations. Something about this thing that bothers me. Let's see. How about this? I believe that every single woman on this campus, all 7,500 of them, are equal to every man on this campus. In fact, I think they should be paid equally for equal work. I think they should they have an equal right not to be the victim of a violent assault. I think women are equal to men. At that point, she backed up a little bit. And then the skater came over and decided he wanted to talk to me as well. And we engaged in this dialogue, and he was saying, "Look, women have a right to choose." And I said, "Well, help me understand what you mean. Do you mean that women have a right to choose to do anything they want? Do they have the right to choose to kill their 2-year-olds, for example?" "No, of course not, but that's different. The unborn are nothing like a 2-year-old. They can't think, they can't talk, they can't breathe." You know, we had this great dialogue going back and forth. And so the professor saw that, and she thought, "I don't like the way this is going." So she said to this young man, "You don't have to talk to this man." And he looked at her. He didn't miss a beat. He said, "What do you mean I don't have to talk to him? I want to talk to him. We're having a great conversation." And it wasn't because he agreed with me that he responded that way. It was because I treated him with respect. And I dignified him with difficult questions to answer. And I took the time to build common ground with him. And I even admitted to him that I might be wrong about some things. And that had an impact on him. And my question for you is, when you're on the hot seat, like I was, when somebody kind of comes at your Christian worldview or your view on abortion, what response do you get? Do you get the response that says, this person has nothing intelligent to say? Or do you get the response that says, man, I really want to talk to this person. I really want to hear what they have to say. Well, this morning we're going to look at another model of good dialogue. I'm so excited to get into this passage, Luke 10:25. It's probably my favorite passage in Scripture. We're going to learn from Jesus and what he, how he interacted with one of the leaders of his community when he was put on the hot seat in his day. And so go ahead and turn there, Luke 10:25. Go ahead and pull your outline from the bulletin there. There should be a full-page outline that you can follow along the sermon this morning. I'll go ahead and read the passage. And a lawyer stood up and put him, Jesus, to the test, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said to him, What is written in the law? How does it read to you? And he answered, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, You have answered correctly. Do this and you will live. But wishing to justify himself, he said to Jesus, And who is my neighbor? Jesus replied and said, A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers, and they stripped him and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. And by chance, a priest was going down on that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion. And came to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them. And he put him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. On the next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, Take care of him, and whatever more you spend when I return, I will repay you. Which of these 3 do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands? And he said, The one who showed mercy toward him. Then Jesus said to him, Go and do the same. Now let's look more closely at this passage for a moment. You see how the lawyer starts out by asking, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? You see, he wants a system. He wants a rule to follow. But Jesus, really in the style of the rabbis of the day, gives him a dialogue instead. He decides to interact with him, asking questions, taking responses, and he works with him that way. It's a great model for us today. Instead of just telling him, look, here's how you have eternal life. Help everyone in need. Help everyone who has a need that comes across your path. No, Jesus doesn't say that. He says, well, what is written in the law? How does it read to you? And he lets the man answer, and the man quotes the Old Testament, a couple of Old Testament passages. And then Jesus just says, look, you've answered correctly. Do this and you will live. I love this because he doesn't pontificate. He doesn't say, oh, but do you really understand those verses from the Torah? Do you really understand what God is saying to you? Have you lived it out? No, he says, You've answered correctly. Do this and you will live. And then he closes his mouth and he waits. And so often in our interactions with people, this is the part we forget. We forget to just let them have their process, to let them be on the journey that they're on. You see, that gave the lawyer a chance to then say, well, who is my neighbor, Jesus? And it says in the text, he's wishing to justify himself. And I take that to mean, essentially, he was asking, Jesus, okay, now there's There's lots of, I know how to love the Lord my God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, but how do I love my neighbor as myself? I sure hope that I'm, all the people that I'm loving, that that's who my neighbor is, right? Because I know there's people that I neglect. So really his question is not, who can I help? His question is, what kind of person can I ignore? What kind of person can I ignore? Now, of course, this is the wrong question, right? So Jesus decides to help him reframe his question by telling a story. And Jesus turns the question back to him and says, in this story of the man who was beaten and left half dead, and then three men came by to try to help, and they saw him, and only one of them helped him, which one turned out to be a neighbor? Which one proved to be a neighbor? So Jesus turns the question. It's not what kind of person can I ignore? It's what kind of person should I be? What kind of person should I be? And of course, the answer is you need to be a neighbor. And what is a neighbor? It's someone who meets the needs that God places before him. As my friend Scott Klusendorf says, the Good Samaritan didn't just feel pity for the man. All of them probably felt pity walking by that man on the road. It was the Good Samaritan who took pity on him. He didn't just feel pity, he took pity on the man. My question for you this morning is, which character in the parable do you want to be? Do you want to be the priest and the Levite? I know all of your answers. Your answer, everybody's going to say the same thing. I don't want to be those guys. And here's the reason why I don't want to be the priest or the Levite. They missed out. They missed out on what God wanted to do that day in their lives, in their hearts. See, I want to be the person who joins God in his work and becomes the person that God made me to be. And that means a certain way of relating to the people around us and the needs around us in our world today. So the question I want to talk about this morning is, how can we prove to be a neighbor in today's world? And I'm going to invite you to join God in what he is doing, because it's just incredibly exciting to see. In order to find out how to prove to be a neighbor, we're going to have to look at what the needs are in our world. And there are many needs. Lots of people are doing great things, meeting needs in Africa, and there's AIDS in Africa, and there's poverty here in the U.S., and there's people in our community who have needs. So those are all very important. I'm going to talk about some needs that are very hidden today, and they have to do with the issue of abortion. What I call the hidden wounded. Let me just read to you a story from my book, Common Ground Without Compromise. This is actually a story I picked up on the internet. A girl named Sydney took a pregnancy test at the age of 15 and found that with the help of her boyfriend Dylan, she'd managed to get pregnant. That was July 2nd, 1999. In the weeks that followed, she waffled back and forth between giving birth to the child and having an abortion. Which should I? And you can just imagine how difficult that was for her. One thing my wife and I have realized through the process of getting married and then getting pregnant and then going through the labor process and giving birth and now caring for an infant, one thing we've realized in that process is how difficult it is to think about even having a child. Even when you, for a woman who has a husband, who has enough money, who has a house to live in, who has a safe neighborhood, all of those things are in place in our family, and we thank God for that. But it's still difficult. It's still an emotional roller coaster for my wife and for me. Right? It's very difficult to think about having a child. So think about Sydney, age 15, her boyfriend. She doesn't have any confidence he's going to stick around. And she's waffling back and forth. And she posted her journal on the internet about a conversation she had with her mother a few days later. It was like her heart turned cold, Sydney says. She said she wanted this to be as hard on me as possible and told me I should have an abortion. So she's making me kill my child. I can say to my future kids, hey, you would have had a brother or sister, but I killed it. I've definitely already learned my lesson, but she can't seem to understand that. It's like she doesn't have a care in the world for me anymore. A week later, she wrote this. Well, things are getting a little better around here. I thought I had made my decision to have an abortion, and Mom came in my room last night and basically told me she didn't want me to have one anymore. And I think she's right. I'm just not really wanting to give up my life right now to raise a baby. But it's not right that the baby would give up its life just for a stupid mistake that Dylan and I made. You see the turmoil, all the back and forth for her. 2 days later, Sydney was no longer pregnant. She went ahead and had the abortion anyway. How is it possible for a girl one day to say, if I have an abortion, I'm going to be killing my child? And then the next day, she goes ahead and has the abortion. How is that possible? In fact, I think many women who have abortions are in similar situations. They think that it's wrong for them to do this. They think that they're killing their child. But they feel backed into a corner by their fears. And they trust their doctor. And they trust their government. And the government has said that the unborn is medical waste. And their doctor says, look, it's your choice. And they trust that. And then they say, well, I guess I should do this for everybody's sake. I talked to a girl at a Midwest university, and that's precisely what she said. She was a Christian from a prominent Christian family in town. And her parents would have adopted the baby. She knew that. She was confident of it. Her boyfriend would have married her. And she said, well, I found out I was pregnant on Monday, and on Friday I decided to get the abortion. It was just what was best for everyone. You see, in a country where abortion is legal, where everyone just believes, look, everybody, you just have the right to choose, I think that women take that in, and you start to live by that, even if you believe that abortion really is the taking of an innocent human life. But you can see Sydney's turmoil in the midst of this. This takes place 3,600 times every day in America. Almost every abortion in this country is an elective abortion, which means it's not medically indicated, it's not necessary to save the mother's life. Almost every abortion is for social and economic reasons. This is by the woman's own testimony. This isn't just something I'm making up. 3,600 times every day, women like Sydney are going through these decisions, and they're struggling with them. And we can't minimize that this morning as we discuss these issues. Let me share with you an email that, actually, this is not an email. This is a poll that we took on a college campus. At that same exhibit, we asked the question, should abortion remain legal? And here's one response. Some people signed the yes side, some people signed the no side. And this woman said, I had an abortion and struggle with the guilt every day. I wish I would have never had the choice to ruin my emotional and spiritual life. Why don't you go to the next slide? Some people think that abortion is just something that affects women, but it actually affects men very deeply. A young man wrote this letter and left it on our pool table. This is his interaction with the abortion issue that day. He said, Dear Riley, we got a chance to talk to this young man. This is his unborn daughter. His girlfriend and he got pregnant. They had made a pact together. We won't have an abortion. His girlfriend came to him later and said, I did have an abortion. He didn't even know she was pregnant. So he wrote this letter to his unborn daughter. Dear Riley, I will never know you. I never got a chance, but I love you so much. She was never going to tell me about you. She was going to pretend you never existed. When she told me, I was truly speechless. I've never cried myself to sleep before, but for the past 2 weeks, it's the only way I'm able to sleep. There's this void in my life now, a bottomless hurt that I'll never know you. You, my first child. I'll never see you grow. I can't bring you back. I don't even know where you are. So I gave you a home. You'll be with me forever. I love you so much, your father. You see how these issues of childbearing and child rearing and abortion just affect people so deeply in their hearts. You can go to the next slide. Here's a young woman who sent a card back to the Justice for All exhibit that I have the privilege of working alongside. And she said this, quote, "I believe that if I had seen accurate pictures of abortion, that I would not have gone through with my abortion. I was told that my baby was just a bundle of cells at 12 weeks. Now I would die before I had an abortion. I killed my first baby because I was too afraid to face my family, and the father did not want a baby. I still hurt and pray God and my baby, forgive me." And for every man and woman that deals directly with an abortion experience, there are many family members, friends, who either don't know how to help, or they try to help, or maybe they drove her to the clinic, or maybe they knew about the situation but didn't know what to say. I would venture to say that everyone in here has had an experience with abortion in some way. Someone that you know who had an abortion, you didn't know how to respond or how to help. But for every man and woman who deal with abortion and every family that deals with abortion, there's an unborn child that also experiences abortion. I'm just going to put up a few slides of some of the children that are aborted in our country thousands of times each day. This is a four-week child. 7 weeks. It's legal to have an abortion in the second trimester across the country. It's even legal to have an abortion in the third trimester, really for just about any reason in America. These are the hidden wounded. Now, of course, in the case of the unborn, they're also the hidden dead. Now, the question for us today, I think, as we think about the Good Samaritan parable, and then we think about the issue of abortion that we've been discussing, is, doesn't it make sense that these hidden wounded are people that we would need to help? These are needs God has placed in front of us. And for some of you, you're saying, well, I've never had an opportunity to worry about this issue or to deal with it directly. Well, I believe that God will bring opportunities your way, especially after you've had some interaction with the issue, some training. But I want to cover four reasons today why I think we don't prove to be neighbors to the unborn and their parents, these people who are so needy in our communities. I think the first reason is we just don't know how. We don't know what to do. And my antidote to this is let's learn. Let's learn how to care for the unborn and their parents. Let's learn how to come alongside them on the road where we see them struggling with this situation. And let's learn how. How can we help? And there's a lot of pro-life groups out there who are all about changing public policy. Let's get the law changed. And I think that it would be a just thing for our country to change the laws on abortion. But that's a macro scale thing, and it's very hard for us in a micro sense, right? I'm just one person. What can I do? Well, I can vote, but the only law that I can really vote on is maybe a ballot initiative once in a while, and it's usually not something very very far-reaching. It's usually something like parental notification for abortion or something like that. Those are important. But I don't feel, as a micro person, I don't feel like I have all that much opportunity to change things. But see, I think in order to change public policy, we're going to have to change public opinion first. And public opinion seems like a macro thing, because you have the media with all these polls, and public opinion is this big thing you try to get a hold of in the newspaper or something. That's not what public opinion is. Public opinion is a collection of little micro conversations, little dialogues that we have with people, where we get a chance to change people's minds every day on issues like abortion. But the real question is whether we even are willing to talk about it. The last time that I spoke on the platform here was a couple of months ago, and I spoke generally about how to build common ground in conversations. And how to create good dialogue, how to ask good questions. And some of the things that came through in that sermon, and I just recommend that you get the CD today if you'd like. It's out in the foyer. Do we call it a foyer or is it a lobby? The narthex. A few of the things that I mentioned in that sermon, common ground is really a tool. It's a tool for conversation. It's just a way to agree with people whenever possible. But it's also an attitude. It's an attitude that says, look, we're all in this together. I don't know everything. I want to seek truth with you today. I want to ask your opinion. And let's talk about our reasons. And let's work toward the truth together. And I talked about how we can ask good questions to create good dialogue rather than to talk at people. On abortion, that's especially important. I think that Christians go to two extremes on abortion. Either they insensitively proclaim their views without listening, or they listen without proclaiming their views. Some of us just keep our mouths shut, and some of us are really abrasive. Isn't there a middle? Isn't there something in the middle, a happy balance that we can strike, where we build common ground when it's appropriate, but we move the conversation forward? And that is the purpose of common ground, to help us to talk about our disagreements. Let me just take an example from culture that's fairly recent. We have a presidential candidate in our country named Barack Obama, and he was in a debate in April of 2007 where he got to speak on abortion. And I'd like you to read you his statement. And this is not to make a political statement about Barack Obama. It's really to focus on the ideas here. Because what he's going to attempt to do is to build common ground. Let's see if he succeeds. He says this, quote, "You know, I think that most Americans recognize that this is a profoundly difficult issue for the women and families who make these decisions. They don't make them casually, and I trust women to make these decisions in conjunction with their doctors and their families and their clergy, and I think that's where most Americans are." Now, when you describe a specific procedure that accounts for less than 1% of the abortions that take place, and here he's referring to partial birth abortion, then naturally people get concerned, and I think legitimately so. But the broader issue is, do women have the right to make these profoundly difficult decisions? And I trust them to do it. Now, there's a broader issue, though, and that is, can we move past some of the debates around which we disagree? And can we start talking about the things we do agree on? Reducing teen pregnancy, making it less likely for women to find themselves in the circumstances where they've got to anguish over these decisions. Those are the areas where I think we can all start mobilizing and move forward, rather than look backward. Now notice, this is a statement of common ground, right? Barack Obama is saying, look, let's just set aside the disagreement and let's focus on the things we can agree on and move things forward. Let's help some people. Now I'm all for helping people, but this statement does not build common ground with me, because what Barack Obama is saying to me is, I'd like you to behaviorally act pro-choice and set aside all the things that matter to you as a pro-life advocate, or at least the things that matter most to you, like the life of the unborn child who you think is a person, who you think deserves the same rights as the rest of us. Set all of that aside and let's just talk about helping women. But do you see how that's not common ground for me? I'm being asked to be behaviorally pro-choice. I'm not even being allowed to even dialogue about the unborn, let alone make some substantive difference in whether some woman aborts a baby today, right? I'm through the law or something like that. I can't even dialogue about the issue because we're going to set that aside and we're going to focus on the things that we can agree on. Could you imagine if Jesus had built common ground with the lawyer in the Good Samaritan parable? Could you imagine if he would have built common ground that way? Here's how it would have gone. Now, lawyer, sir, there's a broader issue, though, and that is, can we move past some of the debates about which we disagree? you know, these debates about who's our neighbor. Can we move past some of those debates? Like whether Samaritans should be treated like dog meat, or whether it's okay to gorge ourselves while beggars starve, or whether it's okay to beat women for adultery while men get off easy. Can we start talking about the things we do agree on? The people you like, the people that have social status, the lawyers who carry out the letter of the law, each of these people is your neighbor. These are areas I think we can all start mobilizing and moving forward rather than backward. You see how that doesn't really sound like we are moving forward, right? Because the whole point of the parable of the Good Samaritan was to help us to change course. Essentially, Jesus was saying, look, lawyer, expert in the law, I disagree with you. But in fact, I'm going to agree with you that you know the law. And you have spoken correctly, and I'm going to dignify you with a parable, and then I'm going to ask you a question, and it's going to be a harsh question, and I'm going to expect you to come to the table, and I'm going to expect you to move forward in your process. You see how that's a much more robust kind of common ground approach, right? It embraces the things we agree on. Yes, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. But it also moves us forward to our disagreements. Well, who is our neighbor? Now, let's not just talk about the people we agree are our neighbor, the people that are easy to love. Yeah, you know, I was walking by on the road to Jericho, and Tom Cruise was lying there on the ground, half dead. So I put him on my donkey, and I took him to the inn, and I even gave him 2 days' wage to care for. I gave the innkeeper 2 days' wage to care for his needs. You know, 2 days' wage. Think about that. That's like, for someone who makes about $40,000 a year, that's like $100 a day. So $200. Would any of us give $200 for someone? Well, I might give $200 for Tom Cruise because then maybe I get some kickbacks or something. Or, I mean, pick your celebrity. Pick the person you want to meet on the road to Jericho. But do you want to meet the disabled person who can give you nothing back, nothing in return? Do you want to meet the unborn child who's pretty inconvenient to love? You see, that's what Jesus wanted to move the lawyer. He wanted to move him toward the things that they disagreed on. That's the real, I think that's a healthy approach to common ground that I wish everyone would take on abortion. Let me give you some examples of how I've done this on campus. We had a protester at Arizona State University, and I actually take an open mic out sometimes to just let people talk, let people say whatever they want. So this day, we had the exhibit over here, we had protesters over here, and they were saying, do something positive with your outrage, and they're collecting money for abortions. And then at certain times, they would take up their signs and walk around the exhibit, you know, chanting. And I don't know if they thought it was going to fall down. It didn't. At one point, I just say, well, I'd like to hear anybody's thoughts on this issue. This is an open mic. It's an open forum. We believe in free speech. We're displaying our free speech. The student club here brought us to display free speech. You can also give your free speech quite loudly on the mic if you'd like. And a protester put her sign down and she said, yeah, I have something I want to say. And she comes over and she starts giving me an earful about how I'm a man and how can I talk about this issue when I'm a man and how women should have a right to choose. And she's very passionate, and I really appreciated her being willing to share in front of so many people, a whole crowd there by that point. At one point I said, you know, I think there's a lot of things that we actually agree on. And then all this commotion was happening, you know, people yelling out and people chanting around the exhibit. And so we got off the topic for a minute, and then she brought it back. She said, no, I really want to, what do we agree on? What do we agree on? And I said, well, let me just throw some things out there. What do you think about the flippant and callous use of abortion? Like a woman who just says, huh, who cares? I'll just get an abortion. Would you be against that? She said, oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm not for that. I'm not for using abortion as birth control. So then I tried something else. It actually failed. I can't remember what it was now. Then I said, what do you think about late-term abortion? Oh, I'm against that. You see, I'm building common ground with her. These are things that we genuinely agree on. I'm not saying, Do you agree that the unborn is a human being with the full rights and value of everybody else around here? No, I'm not starting with the things we disagree on. I'm starting with those things we agree about. At one point, a young man, on kind of teetering back and forth on his bike, he said, "You know what? You're both uninformed." I said, "Wow, well then that means that we have common ground, doesn't it? We're both uninformed, right?" And so we turned to each other and we high-fived. Right there, you know, pro-life activist, pro-choice activist, high-fiving on the college campus. I love it. Why was that able to happen? Because we were building common ground. Now, does she think that I think women should have a right to choose abortion? No, she knows my position, but I've dignified her along this process. And after an hour or so, I met her on the walkway coming back from the store or something, and we just agreed we should continue this conversation. A few weeks back, I was at Arizona State again doing the same open mic kind of deal, but this time in front of the Memorial Union. And we had a large crowd. It was a lot of fun. An hour and a half of just freewheeling dialogue, and most of it was directed against me. Wow. I mean, that's a good time. This really angry woman came and just let me have it for about 5 minutes on the mic, or maybe it felt like 5 minutes. It was probably 30 seconds. And as I typically do in these conversations, I'm usually clarifying what this person's view is and asking them maybe a challenging question, but I'm really trying to dialogue with this person. And so I decided I'm going to try to build common ground with this woman, and she would not have it. She knew it was a strategy to somehow like oppress women. You're trying to build common ground, and it's this new rhetorical strategy pro-life activists have. I hope that would be good. If lots of pro-life activists use this strategy, that would be great. But anyway, she just wouldn't have any of it. But then at one point, she said, "You know, men are the real problem here, and they should take more responsibility." And I said, "Wait, that's something I can agree with. Men should take more responsibility for their actions in the midst of their sexuality and the situation when abortion comes up." And so we were able to agree there. She didn't really like that, but it does help the conversation for anyone listening around, even if people are angry. Now for you, when you have conversations on abortion, I don't think most people are going to get super angry at you the way that people do with me on campus. I think if you build common ground, you'll find they really appreciate the conversation. Sometimes people build common ground with me. I had a clerk at a store. I was buying some stationery for my wife or buying her a pen or something. And this clerk asked what I do. And I said, "Well, I speak on abortion." And she said, "Well, I'm pro-choice, but I'm totally against abortion as birth control. You know, these women in the Ukraine," and I think she was a Russian teacher or something, "these women in the Ukraine, they have like 18 abortions. I'm totally against that." Now, I went and looked up the stat, and actually the best that I could find in terms of statistics on Ukrainian abortions was that the average Ukrainian woman has 5 abortions in her lifetime. The average woman. So it's not 18, but it's still a lot. Now, can I agree with the clerk on that point? Sure I can, and then I can move the dialogue forward. I think the second reason that we don't prove to be neighbors to the unborn, that we don't speak up on their behalf, that we don't help the women and men dealing with abortion, is that we lack the opportunity. Some of you are probably saying, "Well, it just never comes up. No one really wants to talk about abortion." And I think that that's true in a sense. People are very uncomfortable with the topic. But what I've found in hundreds and hundreds of conversations with people is that most people want to talk about abortion. They just don't want to talk about it in the way that most people talk about it. In a way that's abrasive toward men and women dealing with the issue. In a way that belittles them. In a way that is so focused on the unborn that we can't even see the woman surrounding the unborn. They don't want that kind of conversation, and they don't want the conversation where people yell at each other or get so invested in their position that they can't hear the other person. Most people I meet don't mind that I have a position. They just don't want me to communicate it in a way that is mean to them. But I can understand when people say, "I just don't have any opportunity to talk about this issue or to think about it in a way that's that's helpful to people. And so my antidote to that is, let's create some opportunities. Let's create some. And that's why we're having a discussion group based on my book starting next week. And that discussion group will be open to anyone. And in fact, it's each week, it'll be 2 hours, 4 to 6 p.m., the next three Sundays. But you could come to just one. In fact, if you come next week, I'm going to be playing a video that I didn't show today. And it's actually video of the unborn in the womb. It's a very special video. It's not very common. I will be showing that video, so it'll be a special treat for those of you who decide to join us for that discussion group. You can come to one or all of the sessions. We'll be dealing with different material each session, and you will be the primary participants, and I will be facilitating the discussion. Another opportunity is Common Ground Across North America. This is an opportunity to create dialogue with anybody you know, where you would buy two copies of my book and you would give one to another person and you would have one for yourself. You would read through it or read part of it and then get together for an hour and just discuss it. I have a number of people who are joining us from across the country to do this the week of July 13th. And so I invite you to join us for that. The Justice for All exhibit is another opportunity. And in fact, it's probably the best opportunity you could have to create dialogue on the issue of abortion. It would be a day. It's going to be coming to UCLA and UC Irvine in May of 2009. So you could take a day off work and just come out. We'll train you to talk to people, and this is the easiest conversation starter that ever was. There's lots of people standing around looking at this thing, and you can just ask, "What do you think about this?" And then you're in. You have a conversation. So that's my antidote. Let's create some opportunities. And that's one of the passions of my work, is helping people to have ways to engage the issue of abortion. The next reason that we don't prove to be neighbors to the unborn and their parents is probably the most tragic to me. And that is that we're spending our time trying to seek, quote, seek God. I met a student at the University of California at San Diego. And this was a number of years ago, and he was seeing the exhibit and realizing, wow, abortion is really bad. And so we were talking about all the things he was doing for God and all the ways that he was thinking about, you know, doing worship, and he had some different activities he was focused on. And I said, well, what are you doing about abortion in your community? And he said, you know, I just don't feel called to that issue. And I've heard this so many times over the years. People, most Christians just don't feel called to the issue of abortion. It reminds me a little bit. I mean, it's essentially they're saying, wow, someone needs to do something about abortion, but not me. Kind of reminds me of that Family Circus gremlin, not me. You know, the dad says, who scribbled all over this cartoon? And the kid's, not me. No, not me, not me. And then you see this little gremlin with a marker, you know, he's the one who did the dastardly deed. But see, in this case, we're not trying to pass the buck like the kids in Family Circus. We're hoping the responsibility doesn't get passed to us. We're saying, look, I really hope that I'm not being called to do something about abortion. You know, I don't want to be like Stephen Wagner, the abortion guy. Who wants to be called the abortion guy? Right? Now, I want to be clear here. It's certainly a good thing to seek to discover what God has uniquely gifted each of us to do. But don't we sometimes use that legitimate goal to avoid uncomfortable things that God's already commanded us to do? So often, I think we're just hiding from what's uncomfortable. My wife, Rebecca, made this comment a few weeks ago that I think is really spot on. And it's this: why is it that when AIDS in Africa comes up, or malaria, or poverty, no one says, you know, it's wonderful that you care about that, but I just don't feel called. I just don't feel called to care about those things. I mean, do you ever hear someone say, yeah, poverty is a really serious issue, but I don't feel called to do anything about that? No, everybody says, of course you are called. You were commanded to care about these things throughout Scripture. I think so many times saying, I don't feel called, many times just means, I don't want to. So take stock of your heart today. Is the reason you don't have conversations about abortion because you just don't want to? I mean, have you ever said to God, God, I don't know what to say about this issue, but I really want to have an opportunity. Please, give me an opportunity. I can tell you that I've done both. I've sat, like yesterday, I was sitting there just saying at the restaurant saying, God, I'm ready. Give me an opportunity to share with someone. But I've many times sat on the plane and elsewhere and said, God, I don't want to talk to anybody. Don't bring anybody my way. Please, don't use any of the skills that I have. Don't do that, right? So I've been there. I understand what many of you are feeling. My antidote to this problem, you know, when we are trying to seek God, we say, I don't feel called. Look, let's be honest about it. Are we really just uncomfortable with the topic? And finally, I think we're afraid. Most of us don't want to talk about this because we're afraid of what people will think of us. And I've failed many times at this. I saw a woman at the University of Colorado at Denver. She walked up to our free speech board and she wrote in big letters, you know, F you, and started to walk off. And I could, and she was crying. And I could have said, man, I can see that you're angry. Is there anything that we can do to help you? Or I could have tried to say something. And of course, you're thinking, what do you say to a woman like that? Well, I could have said something. I have a lot of training in this area, but I said nothing because I didn't really care that much about her. There's a man in the plane. We start talking about abortion because of my work, and he didn't pursue the topic. And then later I was thinking, man, why doesn't he bring it up again? And I thought, you know, I bet you the reason is because I don't really want to talk about this right now. And so many times, I just don't really care about the people around me. Some of you may think, I don't really know anybody who's dealing with this issue. But I can guarantee you, you do know people. You just don't know that you know them. You just don't know what they're dealing with. This is a private matter that most people deal with on their own. I think a more healthy way to deal with this is to say something like, what I said to a young woman on the mic a few weeks ago. She said, yeah, I have something I want to say. Did you ever realize that you're just an idiot? I said, wow, is that your argument? You're going to call me names? She said, yeah. And I said, well, I don't really care what you think of me. I care what you think about abortion, and I really want to hear what your argument is. I want to hear you tell me what your reasons are for your position, because I think we can work on this together. See, that's a different approach, right? It's the approach that says, it's not so much important what people think of me, it's important what they think about the truth, what they think about abortion. And you know what? More deeply, it's more important what they think about Jesus and his plan to save them from their sin. So many people who have gone through abortion have never heard that Jesus will forgive them of that sin, but they feel the weight of it. Remember the woman who said, I pray that God and my baby will forgive me. Do you believe that God and her baby will forgive her? Raise your hand if you believe that. Do you believe that someone who has an abortion, God has forgiven them? I agree with you. Now the question is, who is going to tell her? Who is going to tell her? Let's open to our final passage for today, 2 Corinthians 1, verse 3 through 4. Here's a passage you've probably heard before. I'll read it, and then I'll make a few comments, and then we'll close. The Apostle Paul says, Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our afflictions, so that we will be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. You know, at first I was planning to go to this passage and say, you need to be concerned about comforting the hurting people around you who are hurting from abortion. And I think that's true, but I don't think that's what this passage is about. Paul is saying, we have been persecuted. And God has comforted us in various ways, and he's comforted us for a purpose. so that we can comfort other people. And I think the lesson for us in this today is that God wants to comfort us, you and I, as we're persecuted for our views on abortion or our views on anything that's controversial. Now, I'm not telling you to go out and be abrasive. You know that by now. But you're going to be persecuted for your views. If you talk to someone about abortion, sometimes that might be uncomfortable for them and for you, and they might not like that exactly. But if you don't talk about abortion because for that reason, what you're saying is, I don't trust you, God, to comfort me. I don't trust you to comfort me. You won't comfort me. I would rather participate in what God is doing in that exciting process of helping people and working with people and trust that God will come alongside me and comfort me in my affliction so that I can comfort others. Let's trust God to comfort us, and then we can go out and comfort others. Are you afraid to talk about this issue? Let's trust God to comfort us. Let's trust God to comfort us. There's a fifth reason that's not on your outline, and I just want to highlight it briefly. I think the other reason that we don't talk about this issue is some of us are wounded. We're part of those hidden wounded that I talked about earlier. Maybe you've had an experience with abortion directly. It's very common. It's likely there are people here who have had experience with abortion. I'm almost certain of it. And I'm so glad that you're here. And I want to just proclaim to you today the reflection that I have when I come to the table, to the communion table. And it's that I am a wretched sinner myself. I am so in need of God's forgiveness. I've done seriously wrong things. You and I are in the same boat. We are all just in need of God's forgiveness for us. And if you have had an experience with abortion, please make this the first day of your healing process. Please let Christ comfort you. Let him come alongside you. After the service, you could spend some time in the prayer room. You're welcome to come and talk with me, and I will either just chat with you, or I can put you in touch with a counselor who can confidentially kind of help you start to work through that process. Please don't allow this to just continue to be a weight on your shoulders that you never get free of. I've watched many women and men free themselves from the guilt of their past abortion. And they freed themselves through Christ. And there's a process that you can walk through. This has been done by many people. So please don't wait any longer. I would just invite you today to allow us to just join with you to seek God's comfort for you. If you want to do that privately, I think you can trust that God has forgiven you through Christ. I'm going to close in just a moment with one final story, but I do want to just call your attention to this card that you received in your bulletin. If you'd like to receive free training material from Stand to Reason, helping you to be a good ambassador on issues like abortion or the same-sex marriage issue is very present in California right now. We deal with that. We have good resources on our website, but we also send out free training material. Just fill out the white portion of this card. Keep the green portion for yourself and place the white card either in the box in the back or at the table in the back where there are some resources, including my book, if you'd like to purchase that today. There's also a brochure in the back for the Justice for All exhibit. It is extremely graphic. It does show pictures of abortion, so I just want to warn you of that up front. It is in a nice, handy cover, so you're not going to have any pictures forced on you. You can get one of these for free if you just give us your name and address for the Justice for All exhibit folks. They'll be coming in May of 2009, so hopefully our church can be involved more with them. Finally, I just want to share with you the stakes of the message today. What does this all matter, really? I got home from about 40 days on the road a few years back. I was dead tired and pretty much wanted to sleep forever. And I was in bed. I feel kind of like I feel right now, having an infant at home. So I was in bed. I woke up at about 9 o'clock and got up, and I decided to foolishly go and check my email. So I sit down at my email, and I get this message. A friend writes, "My secretary is a very wonderful Christian sister. Her daughter is 37 and pregnant, and she is considering having an abortion. Unfortunately, her daughter talked with an uninformed person who said the Bible doesn't address the topic of abortion." Okay, now I'm sitting here, right? I am a pro-life speaker. I train volunteers and students and adults to talk about the issue of abortion. I train people to make a case against abortion. I train them all of these things. And here I am with this email, and I want to go back to bed. But God put an opportunity in front of me to care for this unborn child and her mother. So I whipped out an email real quick making a biblical case against abortion, and you can find it at our website, str.org. And then I didn't hear anything back, and I wrote another email trying to find out who this person was so that I could check in to see if there's anything else I could do to help. And the next week I got an email back saying, "I'm so glad to tell you that my daughter decided not to have her abortion." And then about 9 months later, I received this picture of little Kennedy. And Kennedy's life was saved not because I'm such a great pro-life defender. I'm just one person, just like you, who was tired, just like you're tired, and who got up and just checked an email. And because I was prepared, I was able to make a difference in her life and help out with saving her. So just want to really highlight for you, these are huge stakes. People's lives are on the line. People's whole lives, in terms of the men and women dealing with abortion guilt, are on the line. So I pray that you will help me to do some work to help these. I just invite you to be a part of our discussion group. You'll learn more about how to talk about the issue of abortion next week in that group from 4 to 6 p.m. Let's take a moment and pray. Lord God, you are our great comforter. You comfort us in all our affliction, not just for our sakes, but so that we might comfort those in every affliction. Lord, we know there are many people affected by abortion this week in our communities. And it's not because abortion is the only issue that matters that we want to do something about that. It's because it's one of the issues, one of the needs that you've placed in our path that we want to help out. And I pray for each heart here that you would help us as we try to process what we've heard today. Help us to just think it through and to let it sink into our hearts. And help us to take the next step. It doesn't have to be a big step, but help us to take the next step of just learning more how to talk about this issue so that we can help others. Thank you for not leaving us stranded with no tools. Thank you so much for giving us your Spirit that we can depend on and rely on and trust in. And we do trust you today. Amen.